We thought we'd start with something a little different, which is called the set-aside prayer. Do people know that? I see. Oh, great. All right. Want to say it along with me, and then we can talk about it for a second for those who don't know how it goes, okay? God, please set aside for me all the things I think I know about this is where we change. Okay, OA, AA, the 12 steps, recovery, and especially spiritual matters so that I can have an open mind for a new experience of all these things. Next time we'll have it printed. So basically, what that means, for those of you who've never heard it, is that when we come here today, we're just going to be open-minded. We might hear something new. And I know for me, when I heard something new, I would always say, well, no, that's not me. And I'd have my hands across my chest. So we just want you guys to just be open to what we have to say. Not that we're going to say anything radical today, but because it's all by the book. But just be open-minded to hear everything and to share things and to write things honestly and openly. Okay? All right. Go ahead.
All right, well, good morning, everybody. This is the body image workshop, which does go till 12. So, And we will take a break about halfway through. So excited that you're all here this morning. Susan and I get so excited when we have the opportunity to do this. It's really an honor and a privilege. But just to give you an idea of the structure, what it is that we do go through all 12 steps, so hopefully you're ready to get to work this morning. We'll be doing some different readings. Everything that we do comes out of the book, so it's not stuff we make up. And then the things that we add to that are those that are our own experience. So we're just going to start off. Susan and I are going to share a little bit about our own just sort of story. And then we'll get right into the steps. At different times, we'll ask you to do some writing, different sharing. You know, it's all what you are comfortable with. You know, nothing is required. Obviously, these are only suggestions. And then we will conclude all the way through to step 12 and finish up at noon. So I will go ahead and just start. Can you time me for like, I don't know, it's only been 7 minutes, is it? Yeah, okay. So my name is Colleen. I'm a compulsive overeater. And my abstinence date is August 2nd, 2002. So I've been abstinent for about 12 and a half years. My top weight that I know of was 311 pounds. So I've been maintaining about 160-pound weight loss for probably about 10 years now. And I have a life that looks completely different than it did when I first came in these rooms. I do have some pictures. I don't know if somebody can grab these and just pass them around. Thank you. Because apparently sometimes people don't believe me, which I find fascinating. Really cool, but fascinating. I mean, really, you know, it's not like I want to walk around people going, you used to weigh a lot more, didn't you? So, you know, it's funny. When I first came into these rooms in the summer of 2002, I didn't come in because I wanted to stop eating. I came in because I felt really uncomfortable in my body. I could no longer pretend that I wasn't this big person that I didn't think I was. See, I always had what I consider to be sort of like reverse anorexia. Like, I'd look in the mirror at this big woman, and I'd, in my mind, though, was a picture of like this thin woman. Not that I ever had any knowledge of what it meant to be a thin woman, because I'd been like overweight probably since the time I was about 9 or 10. That's about the time I started to gain my weight, right around when I hit puberty. And so there was never an experience in my life of being thin or healthy even. But, you know, it just clued me in that my perception of my body was askew. It was not based in reality. But that would make sense because I'm an addict and I'm in full flight from reality, like it tells me in the steps. So when I came in, I could no longer, because there were, you know, those incidents of things like I'd try and fit into the booth at the restaurant and I couldn't quite fit. And so the hostess would sort of like try and scramble and be like, well, why don't you sit at the table? And I was just mortified, you know. So I couldn't go around going, well, at least I'm not as big as her or as him or whatever. Like clearly my body had was taking up more space than I was comfortable with. Because you have to remember that I'm the kind of person that, like, I remember one day, like, looking down and being like, where did the second stomach come from? Like, I just didn't get it. And I used to look at pictures of me, like, you know, like your driver's license pictures or whatever. And I was like, why do I keep tilting my head up so it looks like I have three chins? Okay, I wasn't tilting my head up. I had three chins. I just didn't get it. Like, I didn't understand, like, where all this was coming from. And I didn't make the connection to my eating because that was my survival. Like, that was my drug. Why would this have anything? And I'm not an idiot. I have a master's degree. It's like, I just didn't make the connection. Like, well, how you're eating is what's causing your body to be the size that it is. But, you know, my food was my lifeline. It was my drug. It was my protection. It was, you know, all these things that it really wasn't. But it's what I made the decision that it was. Because there was a time when I needed it to be. And then I just kind of stopped and I didn't ever check back in. And that's really what the steps have given me the privilege of being able to do, is kind of stop and go, wait a minute. You know, it talks about in the big book about how we have to get rid of all our old ideas. And I remember when I first came in, I was like, really? Like, that seems a little extreme. But the point is that it's the ability and the clarity to question those ideas. So this idea that I had that my body was wrong, that my body was messed up, that it was my enemy, that it was the problem. I mean, I have like volumes of stories about, like, you know, if only I weren't fat, blah, 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 blah. You fill in the blank. You know, there was no sense of responsibility there. And to me, that's what abstinence allows me to do, because as I continue in recovery, what I find is that more and more of these little old ideas pop up. And of course, being a recovering addict, I usually pay attention when they become really painful and uncomfortable. And I begin to question them and look at them and say, does this still work for me? And the reality of it is that it was working for me up until the time that I came in and made a decision that it was no longer working for me. And until I made that decision, nothing was going to change. So for me, it's been a process because, you know, growing up, I would do really weird stuff like walk miles and miles after my legs had gone numb. And I would hold my breath, hoping the kids in PE and junior high school wouldn't hear me breathing because I was so ashamed. I would hide underneath big sweatshirts and black. You know, when you're over 300 pounds, black doesn't make you look thinner. It makes you look more black. You know, but like that was sort of the disguise that, you know, well, if it's flowy or whatever, you know. And the reality of it is that whenever I'm making the issue about my body, it's the same thing as making the issue about my food. It's not about this thing inside of me. It's what's going on inside my head. Because given a really good day, everything looks good. I'm happy with my body. I'm feeling good. I'm having a really crappy day. All of a sudden, this is annoying, and I don't like how this looks. And, you know, like, it's all my perspective. It's all what's going on in between these two ears. And, you know, that's what the 12 steps work on. And I think that's part of what initially, well, that's how our paths crossed, you know. We were both kind of doing pieces. Like, I was doing steps 4 through 9, and she was doing steps 6 through 12 or something. And we're like, we should put this together and have all of them. What a concept, right? Because the power of the 12 steps is a process to connect me with my true self, to get me out of the misery and out of the fog and out of the denial, and to take a cold, hard look at my life. And the beauty of doing it as part of the program of Overeaters Anonymous, because there are people who study the 12 steps as like some random individual study, is that I don't have to do it alone, because I'm scared to death and I don't think I can do it. So you grab my hand, you say, it's okay, I'm right here, we can do this together. you know, it's going to be all right. Like, whatever it is you think that you're going to experience, I've probably been there and you're not alone. And so that gives me the courage to move forward, and that gives me the courage and the willingness to take that look. And even if I don't like what it is, I know that, first of all, my higher power has already been there, done that, and is like, this is not news to me, Colleen. I'm so glad that you're looking at it, because I'm going to show it to you from the light of the 12 steps. And that is what will allow the transformation to occur. So I live in a healthy body weight. I don't wake up every day going, oh, this is fabulous. Some days I do. Other days I'm like, ugh. You know, like I've had this pain in my shoulder lately, and I'm like, oh, you know, and I have to slow down and I have to do things differently and use another side. And I'm like, this is really annoying. So part of the living amends for me is to not speak of and think of my body in a negative fashion as a result of that. I've lost that privilege. I lived a life of complete despisement and disgust of this vessel in which I inhabit, which I've learned is a gift. And if I treat it well, and if I treat it kindly, both in action and in thought, as the steps have taught me to do, then I live in harmony with it. But the moment I start thinking it's not going the way I want it to, and therefore this is a problem, then I'm in discord. So, you know, I would just encourage you as you go through the steps on this, you know, the reason why we introduced the set-aside prayer is because, you know, we all think it's about this and I just need to love my body, you know, and it starts with the little pieces. Like, I've always liked my collarbone, you know, like from the neck up or whatever, so I started there. I couldn't focus on what I called my thunder thighs at the time because I hated those, you know, and like, there's still, like, I have extra layers of skin and stuff like that. And I have to catch myself and going, ugh, and go, thank God it's not filled in anymore. And thank you for the purpose that you served in my life. And thank you that you don't feel you need to fill up to do that anymore. You know, because the protection that I have that I need comes from my higher power, not from some idea that my body does it. So, I don't know if we have, I don't think there's not really space for questions or whatever, but if you do have questions as we go through, feel free to jot them down, and then maybe at the break or something like that, we might have an opportunity to answer them. But with that, thank you for letting me share.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Susan. I'm a compulsive overeater. Hi, welcome everybody. We're so happy you're here. Just a little bit of business. There's paper and pencils up here for anybody who doesn't have it, because we're going to do a lot of writing today. So just know that that's there. So I got abstinent on October 26, 1986, and I came in. I was a size 18. I'm not even 5'2", so it's a big size for a short little one, and I'm not that today. But the thing I wanted to say first about what I've learned about my body image is it kind of doesn't really matter what my body looks like. It's all, like Colleen said, it's all up here, how I feel about myself. And when I was 6, I started getting made fun of for my size. And I started hating myself and being embarrassed for who I was. And what I did was I stood behind things. Even at 6, I remember in our backyard there were we had some garbage cans out to the side. And I used to stand behind them and talk to people like this was a normal thing, talking in the garbage, you know. But that's what I did, because so people wouldn't be reminded of what I looked like, and they wouldn't call me names. It was pretty devastating. And, you know, I have a 5-year-old son now. And I look at him and I think, God, what does he think about himself? You know, it's kind of hard to imagine somebody that young hating themselves so much. But I did. And when I was 10, I was put on my first diet. That lasted 5 days. I lost a pound a day because I was 10, and somebody else was making my food. And after that, I couldn't do it anymore. But what that did was it kind of set me up for future dieting, which meant that I expected to lose a pound a day anytime I dieted. And then the insanity of the disease, you know, we hear about, you know, in step two, the insanity. Then I expected to lose 5 pounds a day. And if I didn't, the diet wasn't working. I'll start again tomorrow. But today, I'm going to eat everything I want. And it's kind of how I lived my life from when I was 10 years old until I got here. I'm going to do this tomorrow, and then I'm going to eat everything I want today because I'm never, ever, ever going to have it again. And the idea of, at that time, or any time in my life before I got here, of never, ever, ever having something again was too terrifying for me. Even when I was here a couple of months and I wasn't eating sugar, and my sister said to me, "Do you mean to tell me that you are never, ever going to have a piece of chocolate cake ever again?" And I remember I just like, my whole body shook, and I said, "You know what? I don't know, but I just know today I'm not going to have it." So things like that have taught me to live a whole different life than when I came in here. And like Colleen said, it happens little by little that we get these little insights and everything. But what I want to say about today is, I should also tell you this. I got abstinent on a Sunday, and I did not have one more binge. I did not have everything that I was going to eat because I'm never, ever, ever going to have it again. It was just sort of, it was a day that somebody said to me, somebody not in program, who said to me, "How long have you been going to OA?" And I said, "About 5 months." And he said, "Well, how come you're still fat?" And you know what? He was right. He was right. I was a size 18. 5 months in OA, what was I doing? And something happened. I just got honest with myself is basically what happened. And that was, you know, kind of off and running. My abstinence has changed. Very slightly, but it has changed to kind of meet the narrowness of the road that I've come upon. But today, my best moments are when I'm not thinking about my body, when it's just my body, you know, and I'm just out there living life, and I'm not doing things because of my body. I'm not going to the beach. I'm not going to a party. I'm not meeting new people because I'm too ashamed of who I am. So the best moments are when I just am in life, in the moment, and not thinking about me. So as Colleen said, this we've been doing this, I think about 8 years now. We've been doing it in and around Southern California. Whenever we're asked, we do it. And it also has evolved over the years. And as she said, we go through all the steps. Everything that we say is backed up. We say nothing original here. It's all backed up with the literature. And just hope you have a great time today, and hope that you get out of this what we've gotten out of it, because anything that we're asking you to do, we have done ourselves. So thanks for being here, and should we get started? All right. Thank you. So we're on step one. And you're going to get how about this? Why don't people get paper and pencil before we start? And then don't take one sheet. Take a couple.
I'm taking from me and someone else.
Take as much as you want. We've got lots here. Okay, are we all set here? All right. We're going to start with step one, which says, we admitted we were powerless over compulsive eating, that our lives have become unmanageable. I'm just going to adjust the steps for what we're doing here. So right now, we're just, for argument's sake, going to assume that everybody believes they are powerless over compulsive eating in any way that you do it. Okay? Can do that? All right. So in the OA 12 and 12, it says on page 6, only an honest admission of ourselves, of the reality of our condition, can save us from our destructive eating. But let's not forget that on the other side of we are powerless over compulsive eating, there's that little dash. And on the other side, it says that our lives have become unmanageable. And the same principle applies to our lives, our unmanageable lives, about what we think about ourselves. And I've been around long enough to know that when we come in here, we don't skip in. We kind of crawl in on bloodied knees. And our number one problem for me is that the self-loathing that goes on. So what they say is Dr. Silkworth and Carl Jung and the Oxford Group, every place that our program came from, they all agree that a sick mind cannot cure a sick mind. And they all agree also that the only way that we get relief is when we have a psychic change from a power greater than ourselves. So we had to ask ourselves about being powerless. In the big book, on page 52, these are called the bedevilments. I don't know if any of you are familiar with them. We had to ask ourselves why we couldn't apply our human problems, the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. So that's how we come in here. And so we just want to have just a little bit of writing about how has the way you have felt about your body affected your life? For example, socializing with people, going places with people, intimate relationships, confidence in yourselves. So just take a minute to write about that. Just look up when you're done, okay? We are going to be doing a lot of sharing today. On some of the writing, not this particular writing, but we encourage you to read this to your sponsor or somebody, grab somebody after the workshop, just to tell it to another human being in your higher power. Okay, so
the other thing too is that sometimes you might find like you hit a nerve when you start writing about one thing and there isn't enough time to continue whatever, and we encourage you to give yourself permission to go back to it and look over it and just honor that for yourself as well. You know, we may not have the length of time to cover some of the stuff that you see here, but you know, can look at that as a gift as well.
Okay, we're going to move on to step two. Step two says, we came to believe a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. What I find so interesting about these steps is that they only mention food in the first step. And then the rest of it, it's all about our disease and what goes on in our heads. So if our lives are unmanageable and we need to be restored to sanity, why not apply it to this part of my life also? So in the big book, it says, Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? And in page 16 in the OA 12 and 12, this book really has so many great things in it. I got it when it first came out, and I was raised on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that really kind of is my go-to book. But every time I read this book, I just think, how did they know this is me? You know, it's just really just amazing. So it says, we can begin to be restored to sanity by asking ourselves what exactly we needed and what and wanted God to be to us and want to do for us. Then we acted as if God were really exactly what we wanted and needed our higher power to be. We became willing to let go of any concept about God which wasn't helping us to recover from compulsive eating, which I just love that. Just get everything out of there. So coming to believe was something that happened as we began to take action, which others told us had worked for them. So now we want you to write about what does sanity look like to you and your obsession with your body or how you think about your body? What does what does sanity look like to you in your obsession with your body or how you think about your body? Another way of looking at this is, how would you really like to feel when you think about your body?
Okay, now on to step three. I'll turn the sound off on that thing. Came back on. Okay, so step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So in the big book on page 60, it says that, you know, when we're convinced that we're at step three. So that's that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. And then, you know, I love it in the big book. It has these questions. So what do we mean by that? And what do we do? And then it's going to tell me, and I don't always want to hear it, but that's okay. So it says the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So I had to admit that my waking up in the morning and looking in the mirror and going, ugh, was not working. Funny how that didn't motivate me to try and treat myself any better. So it's the little things like that, the little subtleties, okay? And then on page 62 in the big book, it talks about how that this selfishness that we must be rid of, it's going to kill us. And it was killing me. And God makes that possible. And it says there seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. And it said we had to have God's help. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. I had to quit playing with the idea that I knew better than God. That I had to get that if that was how I looked at my body and my experience, then clearly that was not how God looked at it, because God looked at it differently. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in the drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is our principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. And then it says, most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. You know, there's a lot of really great promises in the big book, and that's definitely one of them. Talk about really cool. Triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. So it tells me here that if I am willing, one day at a time, to allow God to be the director, that perhaps my experience will be that much more freeing. There's a entry here in the Voices of Recovery, which I think really explains step three rather brilliantly. It's actually from August 10th. It says, we now say yes to this power, deciding from here on to follow spiritual guidance in making every decision. That's from the OA 12 and 12, page 19. In every decision, my mind went into an instant rebuff mode upon reading those words.
Oh, sure, I could see the need to surrender my will and my life to a power greater than myself in food-related matters. Just how many fruits can I dice up really small and cram on top of my cereal and still remain spiritually fit? How many trips to the salad bar constitutes a normal meal? But every decision, whether to ask for a raise, to take on a new sponsoree, to read Lifeline or TV Guide, to go to bed with this attractive stranger, to phone my mother or my sponsor, to tell this jerk I'm plenty miffed, in all the small and large decisions that make up a day, that make up a life. The words on the first page of step three gaze back at me serenely. I hesitated and then totally capitulated to their injunction, and I've never regretted that surrender. So the question that I want you to just take a couple minutes to write on here for step three is, what would you like your higher power to do for you in the area of body image? What would you like your higher power to do for you in the area of body image? For me today, sometimes that in the morning, it just looks at me saying, God, please help me not speak angry words to my body today. Okay. On to step four. Step four says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So in the AA 12 and 12 on page 49, it tells us that when we begin this step, pride will jump up and say, you need not pass this way. And fear says, you dare not look. And then it says, but the testimony of AAs who really tried a moral inventory is that pride and fear of this sort turn out to be boogeymen, nothing else. Once we have a complete willingness to take inventory and exert ourselves to do the job thoroughly, a wonderful light falls upon this foggy scene. So again, this is a promise. As we persist, a brand new kind of confidence is born, and the sense of relief at finally facing ourselves is indescribable. These are the first fruits of step four. I guess it's the second time they mention food. Fruit? I want fruit. I can eat that. Okay. So what we're going to do now is we're going to begin the inventory process. There's three parts to it. The first two are writing. So what I'm going to do is give you a handout, and that is a focus on your history. It's this one. Yeah. And so what there are just different writing prompts. You don't have to, for those perfectionists in the audience, in case there are any, you don't have to write on every single one, okay? Just whatever jumps out at you. They just come from different, potential experiences that I've had and other fellows have had when they think about issues with their body. We're going to give you about 10 minutes to do that writing, and then we'll go into the second part, which is the present. Yeah, the second part is the present. So this part focuses on your history, like up to this point, or up till the time you came into program, whichever seems most appropriate. There's no wrong way to do this, by the way. Okay, all right. Can I have everybody's attention, please? If I could have everyone's attention for just 1 second before we get all freaked out, okay? The handouts that they gave me, they put page one and then page two, page one and page two. I thought they put them in separate stacks. So just make sure you work on the history one, the part one. So we have more handouts coming around. So right now, just make sure you have a part one. And then I'll come around and make sure you're going to get part two in just a second. Raise your hand if you do not have part one. Let's do that. Okay. So take a deep breath. All right. What we're going to do now is you're going to do the last part of the inventory. You don't need a list of questions for this one. You may need more paper, potentially. I'm going to give you 5 minutes for this part of the inventory. What you're going to do is you're going to draw a picture of yourself, okay? Now, this is not about being Picasso or about drawing all the intricate etchings of your face and then not putting the rest of your body. My idea of drawing a picture of myself is a stick figure because I'm very not artistically talented. The point is to have some kind of depiction of your whole body. And then what you're going to do is on the parts of your body that you do like, you'll put like a heart or a star or some kind of positive symbol. On the parts of your body that you don't like, you're going to put an X. And there's no drawing a big X over the whole body. I know how we think, okay? So does that make sense? You're going to just draw some kind of depiction of your body. It doesn't have to be whatever it is. It's fine. Literally, I'm not kidding you. I draw a stick figure. I can't draw. So, and you're going to put a heart or a star or some kind of positive symbol on the parts of your body that you do like, and then an X on the parts of your body that you don't like. Any questions? Okay. I'm going to give you about 5 minutes for that. Okay. Go ahead and wrap that up. Okay, so what I'd like you to do is give yourself a round of applause for having just finished the 4-step. Woo-hoo. So now we move on to step 5. Step 5 is admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. So in the AA 12 and 12, it says on step 5 that all of AA's 12 steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires, i.e., oh God, I hope nobody ever reads or hears any of this. They all deflate our egos, okay? And it says when it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than 5, but scarcely any step is more necessary to long-time sobriety and peace of mind than this one. So what we are going to do in an effort to obtain that peace of mind, and it talks about in the big book on page 72 about how the idea is to share your whole life story. So again, within the parameters of this workshop, whatever is most safe, that's part of the reason why we feel, it's good for you to share this stuff with your sponsor. So again, no one has to share anything. What we're going to do is we're going to have you find a partner, okay? And we're going to give each person about 8 minutes, and you can share whatever part of the writing that you've done thus far you want to or feel comfortable sharing, okay? So whether that's the first part, the second part, the you want to share your picture, whatever, again, you're most comfortable with. You just want to focus on some of the answers you did to the first 3 questions. You know, again, whatever you're most comfortable with. And then we'll let you know when it's time to switch. And then the other person has about 8 minutes. Okay. Then after that, we will go ahead and take a break. Okay. And then when we come back, we'll proceed with the rest of the steps. Any questions? Okay.